Welcome to another episode of Listen, Learn, and Love, hosted by Richard Osler. My guest on today's podcast is my friend Sam Skidmore. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you.
Just a little background on Sam. You'll get a chance to hear this directly. Sam is 23. He is a BYU psychology graduate. We have one of those in our own home. Sam graduated in 2018 and is looking at PhD, becoming a PhD. He'll talk about a little bit about that. Sam is a return missionary from the Florida Fort Lauderdale mission. And tell us what language you spoke.
I spoke Haitian Creole.
Haitian Creole.
Yeah.
How do I say that word? Creole.
Creole.
Yeah. Creole.
Creole.
Sam grew up in the same part of England where I served my mission.
Yeah.
So I think you left at age 8, but you still have an English accent we'll get a chance to hear.
Kind of.
And Sam will talk about his life as a gay Latter-day Saint. And I have had the chance to visit with Sam a week earlier. It's a Sunday afternoon. Sam and I have both been at church. I went to our stake conference today, and our stake president, in his talk, just read from the New Testament the words of Christ. And it was just wonderful to hear that. I love that. And I think we've both been at church today. It's a Sunday afternoon. And Sam offered a wonderful prayer as he's going to share his story. And so let's start with, do you remember anything about living in England, Sam?
Oof.
This will just take me down memory lane.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was born in Stockport, which is right outside of Manchester.
It is. I love Stockport. I remember a fish and chippy in Stockport.
Good. Good. Yeah. I only lived there for like 7.5 years. So not very long. Most of my memories now are just like family memories, honestly, things at home. But they're all good memories. We try and go back and visit every year or so. So.
And where did you grow up then in the States when you came to the States?
We moved just to Holiday, Utah. So we've been somewhat local for the past like 20 years.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Tell us tell us about the story of coming to terms with your sexuality. When did you become aware you're gay? And just help our listeners as you share that story. And thanks for doing this, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. From like other people that I've talked with, I feel like my story is kind of different in that I didn't have like an aha moment. I could tell that something was off from a very, well, off. I could tell that something was different from everyone else from a very young age. I think around the age of like 10 or 11, I kind of realized what was going on. And it made a lot of sense. It wasn't like a stressful realization at the time. But yeah, I mean, I just kind of accepted it early on. It just made sense. Kind of answered a lot of questions that I had about myself, and I haven't really questioned it since then.
Did you talk to anybody at age 10 or 11? Did you keep this reality of who you are to yourself?
I kept it very quiet until I was 19, I think, was the first time I told somebody.
And tell us what it was like to be those nine, eight, seven years just keeping this to yourself.
It was really hard. I was struggling a lot. Like, I knew that I was gay, or SGA, whatever you want to call it, from a young age, like I said, but it was hard to like fully reconcile, I guess, or incorporate, just because of church messages and community expectations and things like that. So there was a lot of suppression, like anxiety and depression, unfortunately. And I don't know if it had to be that way. It might have just have been me keeping it to myself for fear of the unknown of what would happen if I were vocal. But it did take me a very long time to finally have the courage, I guess, to talk to somebody about it.
And I think both things are take courage, to not talk and to talk about it.
Yes, it's very true.
There's not an easy road, and I'm sure you at times felt really close to talking to somebody about it. You thought, I'm not sure that the risk is worth it.
Right.
Talk about your emotional health, because a lot of the men and women that I talk to during these closeted years are in a really tough spot emotionally. Share with us some of that journey and how much suicide feelings you had.
Yeah. So around 11, I knew kind of what I was at that point. Like I said, I'd labeled it at least. I didn't really feel that different until like 13 or 14. Is when I started noticing real like depression setting in. And that's also the time that my dad left the family.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, it was kind of a rough situation. And that's the first time that I remember specifically having like a depressive episode, where I just didn't do anything. I didn't have a desire to do anything. I didn't feel any emotions for a while. And then from there, it was fairly consistent. Just at least once a month, I'd have periods of just a lot of depression. Got very anxious. I still kind of am very shaky as a human.
That's honest.
Yeah. And I've learned now that it's not something to be ashamed of per se. It's just like something that's happened to me, I guess.
What percent of your depression was related to your sexual orientation and just the difficult road that put you on?
I honestly think most of it. Obviously, there were other things going on that contributed, but I think just the constant fear and suppression, and then like guilt and shame from messages that I was hearing at church, or that I assumed I would hear from church, at least.
Tell us what messages were hard. If there's a thoughtful listener who's saying, you know, I recognize there may be closeted, you know, LGBTQ kids in our congregation, I want to not only support the doctrine of the church, but I want to create messages that are helpful for closeted youth in my ward or in my family. What's helpful, Sam, that you would suggest to them?
Yeah, I think the good thing about that is that they don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Good.
And that you can support the doctrine and believe it and still be a good person. I actually think that they should be connected. Just because our main teaching is to love God and then to love our neighbors like ourselves. And so even if we can't fully understand somebody who has a different sexuality than you or anything that's not like in the box of what is accepted, I guess, quote unquote. It's very important to just love them. It's kind of hard to put yourself exactly in their shoes, but if you were in their shoes, you would want that love and acceptance from other people. So why would you not give that in return?
Did you hear any kind things about LDS LGBTQ people in these years between 10 and 18?
I did. In my journal, I have like two or three instances written down, but those two or three, unfortunately, are clouded by like hundreds of negative experiences, not all in the church, but maybe just comments that family or friends had said that didn't know.
Tell us a couple good comments you got then, if you can remember.
Yeah. It kind of, just like I said before, and this is how my mindset got that way maybe, but it's just the idea of we should love everybody. Like Jesus didn't judge anybody based on if they were sinning or if they looked this way or whatever. It's just like a love for everybody. And that makes us feel better too when we're loving other people.
I like that. Did people, when they say that, talk about specifically LGBTQ or just a love of everybody, and you looked at yourself and say, I'm within that love?
It was more vague, I believe, at least. We didn't really hear.
So it didn't even have to be LGBTQ. It was just this idea that we just love everybody.
All-encompassing thing, yeah.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. What were some of the messages that were hard for you as a young man closeted in your ward,
right,
that you sometimes heard?
I'd hear a lot just that like someone is struggling with SSA or going through this trial or this sickness and things like that. It's kind of small, and I think it's something that a lot of people do, and I have said that as well, like on my mission. So, but it kind of affected me in that it made me think, oh, what I have is a disease, or it's something very wrong. And maybe some people think that, and that's fine, like we can all believe what we want. But for me, I like got away from the depression and the anxiety to a degree by realizing, or accepting for myself at least, that being gay isn't like a trial or a, I don't know, it's not a sickness. It's right. Just a part of me. Like, I believe that God made me this way, so why would that be a sickness?
I love that. What, anything else you want to share during this time before you came out with our listeners, Sam? And maybe a specific question is, if there's closeted listeners right now, no matter what age they are, what would you say to them?
Ooh. That's a good question. I think for the listeners, at least, I wouldn't suggest doing anything that you're not comfortable with. A lot of people talk about coming out and how it's a great experience, but if you're not ready, then it can be very difficult. And when I did come out, there was a long period of transition that was difficult. So I would suggest just trying to love other people, hope that they love you in return, and build up a strong base of like very close friends and family members, so that when you are ready, if you are ever ready, you can come out and not feel as anxious or worried as you would.
That's great advice. What caused you then to come out, Sam, and who did you come out to?
The very first person I came out to actually was my mission president.
Wow. Yeah. On your mission then?
On my mission.
And this is in Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So President Richardson, very good man. I was in a leadership role at the time, so I was spending more time with him. And I wasn't necessarily struggling with it, but it was hard to teach. Like, we don't believe in homosexual relationships. We don't believe in acting on anything outside of a relationship between a man and a woman. And I think it just slowly got to me more and more. And I realized that, I don't know, it was a very safe environment, essentially, because I knew he wouldn't tell anybody. It just seemed like the right time to finally open up and see what would happen.
Tell us about that experience. How long were you on your mission at this point?
It was just over a year.
So you're over a year.
It's about 13 months in.
Sounds like you really trust this priesthood leader.
Yes. Yeah.
And tell us about that experience then. Was it during a regular interview or was it more spontaneous?
Ooh. It was at the end. I think I emailed him the week before a mission leadership council and training meeting. I don't know if I told him in the email. I think I just said I wanted to talk. And I pulled him aside at the end of the meeting, or he pulled me aside into his office, and I just told him. And then he ended up, first of all, he gave me a big hug, which is a huge thing for me, just to have that like physical approval, I guess, that I'm okay. And then he gave me a blessing, and he started rifling through some papers and gave me some talks and some church resources.
Do you remember anything in that blessing that was helpful for you?
Yeah, right off the bat, he said, the most important thing for you to know is that your Heavenly Father loves you exactly how you are. And I do believe that. I fully believe that. And so that, I think maybe more than anything else, is what helped me through the rest of my mission and essentially coming out to other people. It didn't really matter how they responded. Obviously, it did to a degree, but like if God accepts you and loves you for who you are, then everyone else, like, does it really matter in the long run?
I love that he hugged you. Yep. You know, I think that's just a physical reinforcement of, you know, acceptance.
Yeah.
And I think hugs are very healing and helpful.
Absolutely.
And I love that he gave you a priesthood blessing, what he said. How did that help you then to come out to him? I mean, some people would say, well, why did just that one experience help? How did that help you?
I think for me mentally, I didn't want to come out to people before because I had all these images of them like rejecting me on the mission. They'd be like, I don't want to serve around you as a missionary, or I don't want you in my mission as a mission president. Family and friends would be like, I don't want to be around you anymore because you have this illness, this disease. And I've never had that negative of an experience ever. And I'm very fully out to everyone at this point. So it was just my mind, I guess, going to worst case scenario. So it was nice to finally come out to somebody and have a very positive experience. And it kind of helped me realize that maybe it wasn't going to be as bad as I thought it was.
And did you come out to other people on your mission, or was this just between you and your mission president, Sam?
It was just me and him until the end. And then when I got home, I started telling other people.
Did he have any advice for you to come out to other people or not? Or did he just leave that in your court during the mission?
No, he didn't push or suggest in any way, actually, which I appreciate. Like I said before, I think it should be a very personal experience. And if somebody pushes you to come out to somebody, especially if you're not ready, it's not the best situation.
How close did you come out to a bishop or a stake present during your mission interview process?
Before?
Yeah.
I didn't even consider it, unfortunately. I think I was worried that I just wouldn't be able to go on a mission. And it was very socially acceptable to go on a mission.
That's honest.
Yeah.
Were you worried about falling in love with a companion, Sam, during the mission?
Kind of, before. I at least had the thoughts of what would happen if I were interested in one of my companions. It never happened, fortunately. Not that my companions weren't great people. I don't know, I wasn't focused on that, I guess. Yeah, it wasn't a huge deal.
You know, most that I talk to report the same thing, even if they come out to companions, and that's a complicated road, and I don't think either of us would say you should or you shouldn't. It's back to your principle of you need to act on that. But one of the things is talking with so many men and women that are gay before their mission and serve missions is that that is a legitimate concern. I'm going to be with somebody. But most report sort of this because you're part of a, just like you worded it, you're just part of a different a common cause, and you know, you're set apart as a missionary. And just most companions that people I talk to don't fall in love with a companion. Right. And they're part of it. And it sounds like that was what happened for you also.
It was very nice.
Was it hard? You kind of mentioned what led you up to coming out to your mission president. It was hard to teach the, is it that you disagreed with the doctrine of our church, or is it that it was just hard to teach it knowing you were gay and not knowing how you fit into that?
I think it was a bit of both. Back in my mission, I wouldn't have dared accept that I was opposed to anything church related, just because all growing up, family, friends, community, it's a big taboo. And so I think at least in my mind, it was more, I am gay. And so I don't know how comfortable I am teaching this. But looking back on it, I think it's more so the former of, I don't know if I agree with this doctrine. I don't know if I should be teaching this to people, or I don't know. It's a sticky situation because I like the church and I think it's wonderful. And if it works for you, I think that you 100% should follow it and become a better person. But it's very hard for LGBTQ+ people in the church who are trying to have or want to have real relationships with people that they can love. And then to hear the message of, oh, but if you do that, that's very bad and you will get kicked out. So mentally, I don't think I could process that. There's a lot of cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive dissonance. So you needed to come out to a mission president, not necessarily that you needed to stop teaching the doctrine. You just needed to talk to him about sort of where you were as you were processing your own journey. And it sounds like, I think we'll come back to this later in the podcast, it sounds like you're on a crossroads, not, right, you know, with the different roads you're considering.
Yeah.
Thanks for serving a mission. You know, I say this a lot when I meet with men and women that have served missions. It's a big deal. Sam, you gave 2 years of your life to help people come into Christ. It's a big deal.
It's a lot.
In our culture, it's sort of normalized. I sometimes tell the YSAs, if you were Baptist, they might rename the church after you because it's so... it's a wonderful thing you've done, Sam. You're 23 years old and you've given 2 years of your life to help people come into Christ. And I have to think Heavenly Father is really happy for what you've done. And I have to think there are people all over, most that you don't know about, that you've helped. And they will always know your name and what you taught them. So thank you for serving a mission.
Thank you.
Talk about coming home for your mission. You ended up working at the MTC.
I did. So I came home from a mission and
it's hard to get a job at the MTC.
Yes, it is. I was fortunate because I spoke Haitian Creole on my mission. So I came back and I got a job fairly quickly doing the new language, making the new language materials.
Wow.
At the MTC. And then from there I hopped into teaching. There just aren't a lot of Haitian Creole speakers in Utah. So
did you go to BYU before your mission or did you start right after your mission?
So right after I graduated high school, I went on my mission.
Okay.
Came back in the summer of 2015 and started BYU right then.
Tell us about how you were did you come out to other people while you were an MTC teacher?
I did come out to other people, not within the MTC.
Mm-hmm.
I'd considered it a few times, especially when teaching districts that had specific questions about what happens if we teach somebody who identifies as gay or lesbian or... XYZ. But I don't know. I guess
that's fine.
I wasn't sure what the rules were.
That's probably,
yeah. I have told quite a few of them since, if they've emailed me on their missions and been like, hey, we're teaching an investigator who is gay. I'm not quite sure what to do. I'd be like, I've been there.
Wow.
Let me give you some pointers.
Tell us what you'd say to a missionary that's teaching an LGBTQ person. Because that's a great question to ask in the MTC. I think it's a very thoughtful where our missionaries are, that they recognize that they're going to be teaching LGBTQ people about our church, and some join.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the emails that I get when the missionaries are already out in the field, they're kind of more forceful, which I guess missionaries tend to be. So a lot of the times it's, hey, we have an investigator who is gay and he or she doesn't want to change her ways, so we need your help to throw down on them and help them see the light.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not ever going to work. Mm-hmm. I think the advice I usually give is you need to teach them and help them to have faith in Jesus Christ and to like live the principles of the gospel first. And then if they receive a testimony or if they feel good about the church and they're willing to then keep that commandment to only have like a relationship between a man and a woman who are married, then at that point, like, go ahead. But it's not going to be possible to just go up to somebody and be like, hey, you're never going to be able to have a relationship with somebody you are physically attracted to because God said no. It just doesn't work.
I think this is a healthy discussion to have because I think a lot of missionaries are trying to figure out how to navigate this.
Right.
Tell us who you started to come out to then. During your days at, you're a BYU student, you're a psychology major. Tell our listeners a little bit more about coming out to people.
Yeah, so I think the first person I came out to coming back, well, I came out to my stake president, I guess, in my welcome home interview.
Wow.
But that was more just...
That's more back in Salt Lake in your home ward.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It was good. He's a very good man. I knew he was a safe person, and it was just me and him talking one-on-one. He asked what my plans were, and he brought up marriage, as most people do as soon as you're back from a mission. And I was just like, I don't think that's in the cards for me, at least right now, because I am attracted to men instead. And he didn't even miss a beat. He wasn't shocked. He was just like, okay, that's totally fine. I appreciate your honesty. Maybe I can look up some resources for you and things like that. So I appreciated the way that he went about it.
It's a lot of courage, Sam, in your welcome home visit with your stake president to just, as he talks about marriage, to talk about that you're gay or SSA.
Right. I don't know. I wish I'd done it a lot sooner than 20, but I'm glad I did it at all. So.
And I like the way he didn't miss a beat.
Yeah, it was nice. So following him, I think the next person I came out to was my mom. That was a few months later while I was at BYU. The depression had like set in again. I was constantly bombarded with marriage. Like even the teachers and roommates and friends, like everyone was just talking about marriage and dating and all this stuff. And I wasn't ready to come out to them all yet. So I just was like, yeah, I'll get married at some point. Like I'll go on a date, I guess. And it was getting hard. And so I texted my mom and I was like, this is what's happening. And she texted back, came up the next week. We had a good chat outside my apartment.
So when you texted her, did you talk about your sexual orientation or just that we need to talk?
I told her about it all. It was easier, I think.
Maybe that's easier than she has a week to process it.
My intentions were selfish, I'm sure. I think I just didn't want to see her like have a breakdown.
Wow.
But it also did give her time to process, and I think that was good for both of us. And she came down to Provo the next week. We got dinner with two of my sisters that lived there at the time as well. And then me and her went and talked. It was very emotional.
Why?
I don't know. For both of us, I was still of the mindset of, like, I 100% need to make this work with the church, which means I can never have a relationship with anybody. I've, like, come out to you today so that I can be more honest and let you know that I'm depressed and I'm probably going to be depressed forever because I'm going to be alone, kind of a thing. And that's hard for anybody to hear, but especially a parent that loves you. And I think on her end as well, a lot of it was she had this like idea of me getting married and having a happy family. And that was gone for her in that moment. It was just, this is my broken son. So it was a rough day for both of us. She was great. She was a lot farther along than I would have been if someone had thrown it on me and I hadn't been in that situation.
Why was she further along?
Don't know. She's just a very good person. She's a very loving person.
You seem to have a thoughtfulness to see this from her perspective too, and you obviously know your road, but you sort of know why this may be difficult for your mom. Not because she doesn't love you, but because her hopes and dreams for you have changed.
Right.
And maybe she's more aware of the difficult road you've been on and feels, I wish I'd been there more for my son.
Yeah.
So parents, now that I'm a parent, I think of, sometimes I'm not aware of everything my kids are going through. And that makes me, but I think that's just a road parents walk. There's not a way to always know everything that's going on.
Yeah, it's hard. I think she felt more responsibility too, because like her dad had abandoned the family several years before, and she took the whole responsibility of raising us on herself. And so.
She's done a good job. She's got a lot on her plate. Did anybody try to link you being gay with your dad leaving the family?
Everybody. Not everybody, but most adults, I guess. Most older people.
Talk about that. What was their logic behind that?
I'd assume it's just a way to reconcile this person's gay, but God couldn't have made them that way because that would be cruel or something like that. And so, oh, he doesn't have a father figure. I'm sure he just mentally changed when his dad left and became gay. And it's like because of the fall of Adam and all of these things. I've heard a lot of those kinds of things, and I appreciate the perspective. I don't think that's true for me. I mean, I knew I was gay far before my dad left. And I have a brother as well. It's not like I didn't have any male figures around. So, I don't know. I personally don't subscribe to that line of thinking. But if it helps you cope, you can think whatever you'd like.
You're very kind to people and giving them permission to think how they think, but I liked what you said. I could have done 10 years ago what people would have done because I wanted to have everything fit in the nice tidy box.
Right.
And then I looked for a backstory of why it wasn't fitting in the nice tidy box. And I just, where you are, Sam, I just think, you are, who meant God meant you to be, just like your mission presence blessing to you.
Right.
And there's no backstory to explain this, except this is somehow part of your plan. And it's not something gone awry or something that got off track or something we can explain away. So that's just my feeling. And I think obviously, that puts you, as you know firsthand and through your education, knows put people in a much better spot.
Absolutely. I think it's just cognitive dissonance again. It's hard to reconcile two contrary beliefs or things that are going on. And so if you believe so fully in the church and you're not willing to, like, maybe not willing, but you can't see how homosexuality fits into that, then it's easier to just blame homosexuality instead. Like, it's not from God, it's just something in the world that we don't know about. So I get it.
I get it. I'm gonna go back to your mission. Tell us one of your favorite mission stories. Somebody whose life is better because of you, Sam.
So, I mean, I mainly taught Haitians on my mission. There's a couple called Linda and Ronald.
Linda and Renault.
Ronald, yeah. So they, I think they're in their mid-20s now. So they're not much older than I am. They were married in Haiti, I believe, and then moved to Florida. And they lived just like 2 minutes south of our apartment, which was wonderful. Some members in the mission referred us to them. So we went and started teaching them, and they just picked up on everything. They loved it. My second to last transfer in the mission, it was my birthday. And they emailed me and they were like, hey, we've planned out our endowment session and our sealing session. And we know that you're not going to be here in the mission anymore when we go through, but we want you to come back. So I planned it all out, ended up going back with one of my old MTC companions. I went to their sealing and then I got to see the whole mission again.
Wow.
But they're just wonderful people. I mean, I follow them.
Fort Lauder, is there a temple in Fort Lauderdale? There is.
Yeah, they made one while I was there.
Yeah.
They had it dedicated.
That's
very
cool.
nice. So yeah,
Linda and Ronaldo.
Linda and Ronald.
Ronald.
Yeah, they're very good people. I like follow them on social media. Not even just like with churchy things, but just as individuals. They're very loving people, do a lot of help to others, and it's, I don't know, it's really nice to see.
Do you think being gay made you a better missionary?
I think so, actually. And just in general, I feel like any minority or somebody who's gone through something, I guess, they tend to be a bit more open-minded or empathetic in that they can see other people hurting if you have hurt in the same way before. And so a lot of the times I had companions who were just like missionaries in general, they tend to be very one-track-minded of we're just going to teach the gospel. If they accept it, great. If not, we're going to go to the next person. And I tried to be a bit more open-minded, at least, to think, oh, well, this person's going through this. Maybe they'll accept the message if we continue helping them or try a different way. But even if they don't, maybe we should just try and help them out so that they're not having a hard time with life.
I like that.
Yeah.
Did you come out to roommates at BYU?
I did starting in my sophomore year. I was only there for 3 years.
Okay.
So, yeah, my second year, I came out to, I think, just one of my roommates. And he was also an MTC companion. So I'd known him for a while.
Why did you come out to him, and why did you think he would probably be okay?
I came out to him and a few others at the same time,
Okay.
just like mission friends. I was just spending a ton of time with them. And at this point, I told my whole family. They'd asked me to keep it kind of quiet, to not like spread it widely, which I can appreciate because I'm sure they would have gotten a lot of questions that they weren't ready for yet. But yeah, I guess I was ready for more people to know so that I didn't have to feel like I was hiding a part of me. And since I was spending so much time with them, feeling like I had to hide part of myself or that I couldn't be fully open with people, it was difficult.
And what did, let me get the microphone closer to you,
Sorry.
Sam. Talk about how did your friends respond? Even your own roommate.
Yeah, it was good. My roommate himself, he responded well, about as well as I could have hoped given the situation. He didn't really mention it. He was just like, okay. And I don't think we've ever talked about it since.
But he didn't move out.
He did not move out,
He
which
didn't
is
sell his
wonderful.
contract on you.
Yeah, and I wasn't expecting him. He's not the kind of person that's very like lovey-dovey, touchy-feely. He was just like, okay. So that was good. I think that was the best case scenario for that situation. I had a couple other friends that I told at the same time that I was really close with, that I like tended to talk more openly with. And so kind of like with my mission president, when they were very accepting, they like still gave me hugs and things like that, I realized that they really didn't care. They didn't think I was coming on to them. I don't know. They just realized that nothing had changed, and that was very helpful. I was just the same person. They just happened to know something more about me.
That's where your generation's doing better than my generation, Sam. I couldn't have done that. We just pulled away from everybody that I knew that was gay.
Right. I guess.
And I just, sometimes the most healing are the straight guys that have just been your buds for a long time and nothing changes.
Right.
And they know you're gay, but they don't withdraw, they don't get weird, they don't change. And I think sometimes those are the most healing, because you just feel like nothing's changed.
100%. I told a lot more females than males up to that point, because in my experience, the females tended to take it
Yeah.
better, or they didn't really change. And I was more worried about the guys. So when I finally told at least the guys that I was close to and they responded well, that was good. It kind of gave me the push to that next summer just to finally come out to everybody or to be open about it.
So that's great. We've had a couple straight guys on the podcast talk about gay people coming out to them, and so I think all you straight men and women out there, as people come out to you, I think, you're doing better than I was, and I think we just keep accepting everybody and loving everybody. And you can't catch being gay from other people. I think we all joke about that. I sort of talk about it being left-handed or blue-eyed or red-head. It's just how God created people. And nothing we can do to really change that, and nothing. It's not like, if I continue to be your friend, Sam, I'm gonna somehow embrace the gay lifestyle,
Yeah,
whatever that
catch the
is.
game.
I'm joking here. I think we
Yeah.
all know that. Talk about your decision to become a psychology major.
It was a fairly easy decision, actually, which was nice. I started out BYU as accounting major, which was not for me. I very quickly realized. I switched a couple times to different things, but the whole time I was taking psychology classes on the side because I thought it was interesting, and I liked learning more about the human experience. I don't know why I hadn't like realized that I was liking psychology and I wasn't liking any of the majors that I was trying to pursue. I think people just have like a negative view maybe of a psychology major of what you're going to do with that, which is fine. That's kind of fair. But yeah, I just realized that I enjoyed it so much and I felt like I understood myself and other people better. And so I just majored in psychology. It only took a couple years, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I have very close relationships with some of my professors. They helped me realize
what I wanted to do. Did you come out to any of your professors at BYU?
I don't know if I like sat down with them specifically and told them, but my whole senior year, I was very just open about it. So sometimes it came up in class, like I took a psychology of gender class.
Who taught that class?
It was Professor Wood, yeah. Murray Wood. Very good person.
But I agree. She's wonderful and doing great work.
Yeah. So yeah, in that class, I think even in my, I took a positive psychology class, which is just about like positive living for yourself and for others. And just, there were a few comments where it was possible for me to speak up. And so I did.
And yeah. How did that go over? So here you are talking about, you know, these topics and you come out as gay.
Right.
And just answer questions from the perspective as a gay man.
It made a lot of sense in psychology of gender because we talked about that kind of thing a lot. I think in psychology in general, there tend to be a lot more open-minded people because you're learning about all these different things and how people just like are born with different things and they have different experiences and that's fine. Like it's not their fault. It's not even necessarily bad. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
And so people tend to be more open-minded within psychology, at least from what I've seen, which was very nice. It was always a safe space. I for sure was never the only LGBTQ plus person in any of my classes.
Were your classmates kind to you?
Yes. Very much so.
Did they then ask you more questions about your life as they tried to understand?
Some of them did, not in class, but they'd pull me aside after and we'd chat, which was nice. This was mainly within psychology. Again, I took a few like business classes or religion classes where it was a different story, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But that's to be expected, I guess, because there's so many different people and everybody has their own state of mind, I guess. They're all in different places.
Tell our listeners what you hope to do in your career, Sam.
Yeah, so I am hoping to go to graduate school to get a PhD in counseling psychology with a emphasis, or I guess a focus, on LGBTQ plus counseling. So the idea is to teach like at a university level once I graduate, and then to have a side practice for counseling people with depression and anxiety, but specifically within that LGBTQ plus community.
That's cool.
It's the hope.
That's really cool. Keep following your dreams. We need people like you, Sam. You can help so many people as you're teaching and as you're individually counseling people.
It's the hope.
So that's cool. And don't, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that it's, you know, I talk about ability and motivation, that motivation is kind of the tiebreaker. I think a lot of people have the ability, but it's the people that are motivated and kind of know what they want to do. And
right.
And don't sort of look around and say, everybody's smarter than me or everybody's, I don't belong here. I think the longer I get, I want to just, when I meet young people, say, no, don't do that. Don't think you can't do that. Go for it.
Right.
And, you know, I love that you have this dream and there's a need for that. Do you think you would have become a psychology major if you weren't gay? That's a question I've never asked anybody.
Potentially, actually.
And I don't want to communicate that all psychology majors are LGBTQ.
No, absolutely not. I'm not sure, to be honest. I started with accounting because it just seemed like the thing to do, I guess. A lot of people from my mission were doing business-ish type routes. It seemed like it paid well. It would have been very boring, at least for me. It's not my cup of tea. So I don't know. I finally, like I said, I switched to a few different things before I got to psychology, but it was because I just wasn't happy. And I was so like depressed at the time and anxious that I needed something that made me happy. So I'm not sure. I think I may have just stuck it out, honestly, were I not in the position that I was.
When did it become clear to you wanted to do a PhD and actually get clinical training to help people in a private practice?
I've always had the idea of going to grad school, which was nice. My last 2 years at BYU, so when I started the psychology program, Professor Wood again, Dawn Marie Wood, she taught the intro to psychology course where she went over all the different career paths and things that you could do with a psychology degree. And immediately, just like therapy and counseling stood out to me. I've always kind of had a thing where I like talking with people about their issues. I just really like hearing what's going on in their lives and then not even always offering help sometimes, like I try to, but just like being a listening ear because it's not always easy to come by, unfortunately, at least not a fully unbiased ear that doesn't try and coerce you one way or the other. So she said that, and I immediately just envisioned myself sitting down and like helping these people coming in that had issues that either I've been through before and overcome or that I at least know about and hopefully can help them get through.
So that's really cool. Sometimes I imagine the people I interview, their older selves talking to them. That's one of the,
Yes, I wish I had that, honestly.
and you're 23, I'd love to see your 33, 43, 53-year-old
Me
self. I
too.
wish we could just do this once in our life, or God would let us just let our older selves talk. But
Right.
it does make me really excited for your future.
Thank you.
And what you're able to do, and how everything in your life has prepared you now for what's coming before you, ahead
Yeah,
of you.
it really has. It's been
And
fun
I'm
to see.
glad that you're it, BYU is in a different place where you can, come out to some extent in a
Right.
class and with a professor and have a discussion in class and come out to roommates. So, as I'm a BYU graduate, never connected with this issue. But since I've reconnected, connected to this space and then connect with so many people at BYU, BYU's there's a lot of really wonderful things happening there, and there's a lot of really thoughtful people there. And Professor Wood's one of them. I've had the chance, I never thought I'd come back to BYU and teach the gender of psychology class one day as a guest. I thought I'd come back to the Tanner Building and talk about marketing.
Right.
So anyway, but there's great. Great things. There's really wonderful people at BYU trying to do better on this topic.
Yeah.
What's the road to become a PhD? How many years does that take, Sam?
Whew, a lot. It's going to be 5 to 6 more years of school. And then I guess it just depends on what track I take, honestly. I'm trying to do a master's and a PhD at the same time. So ideally, it would just be 4 or 5 years of classes and then a year or two of practice, like supervised practice.
Good. Talk about these two roads you have. It sounds like you've not gone down the road of dating women and thinking that that could be your path. Is that true?
I tried. I definitely tried at BYU and before. I've always been taught that sexuality is a spectrum, and so. Well, maybe not always, but since college. And so I feel like I fall very much on the end, where it's just I've never felt any romantic connection with a woman before. I'm not saying it will never happen because I don't know, but I did, yeah, I tried dating a few different people. It never ended well, which was very unfortunate. I mean, I couldn't feel anything for them, and so I would have to say something. Yeah, it was hard. And so I just finally got to the point where
And
I was
sometimes the
like,
women think, well, it's about me then,
yeah, especially the
because
first 2 years when I wasn't
Sam
out.
pulls out of these dating and the women go home and look in the mirror and go, what's wrong with me?
I know, it's awful. I couldn't keep doing that to people, essentially, especially since I didn't really think that anything was going to come of it. I was just kind of doing it because people expected it. So yeah, I don't see myself dating women anymore, but who knows? As far as men go, yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that one day I can get married to somebody that I actually love, have a family. But again, that's kind of a sticky situation with the church. It's a lot to process and to think about.
So you're at this crossroads where you've got, I sense that you've loved the church and have served the church and have seen the beauty of the church, and you've got this practicality of your own life and faced with either a life alone or a life with a partner. And it sounds like you're feeling it's more a life with a partner.
I mean, I would like that more, I'm sure. It sounds much better than a life alone.
What advice do you have for a priesthood leader, a parent, when they meet with someone like you that's sounds like they're likely to step away?
I feel like you should ask my mom that question. She's actually very good at it. I don't know. Honestly, I think it's for me what's been most helpful is when I've brought up, like, hey, I don't know if I'm going to be in the church forever, at least if it continues the way that it is, because I don't feel like I have a place there. And I also don't want to be alone. And a lot of the times I hear things like, you're not going to be alone. You'll have, like, you still have your siblings and your parents, and you have everyone in the church, and you have God, which is true. And I don't discount those, but it's not the same. And it's also really hard to constantly hear things like eternal marriage is the best, or like the purpose of this life is to get married, have a family, and then ultimately become like God, who is married and has a family. And then to not have anything for the LGBTQ plus community, it's just like that's basically why we're here, and that's what we're going to talk about a lot, because that's where most of the joy comes from. But you don't get that, and we're not really sure why, and we don't have anything to comfort you as far as that goes, but just like hang in there, because we know this is right for you. I get the intention, and I like that people are trying to help me, because they always say, like, just come to church, like, just keep the commandments, it'll
And
be
you did
good.
come to church today.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, that's just, I don't know. At least for me, it's not been helpful because it leads to a lot more like depression, suppression, all these different things. And I just don't, at least recently, it's been hard to go to church because I hear all these messages and everyone has all these expectations for me. And it just, none of it adds up. None of it makes sense to me. And it kind of makes me sad.
Thanks for just sharing the realities of your life. I recognize when I was a BYU student, I wasn't faced with this. There was always an authorized path for me to find a companion and share my life with and have a family. And I recognize that that door is not open for you, Sam. And as a believing member, if you were my YSA, and I talked to sort of pretending to be a YSA bishop still, I'd probably look in the eye and say, I invite you to stay, Sam. I believe in the church. I believe in its doctrines. I believe it's, in keeping our covenants. But I'd probably say, Sam, at the end of the day, you've got to decide the path that's best for you. And why I worry and grieve and some of those things, I'll just, it's part of our doctrine. You choose. And I'm going to leave it at the Savior's feet. I'm not going to see you as somebody that's not worthy of my friendship, my love, my support, my celebration as you become a PhD. I'll just look at you as someone who's living your life the very best way you know how. And I will stay in your life. I'll stay in your social media. If I see you someday in a same-sex marriage, even though I don't want to sort of say, go do that, Sam, but if you choose to do that, I'm going to like your Facebook post. And I'm going to say a nice comment on that. And some of my listeners will think that's exactly what they would do. And some of my listeners would say, no, you're kind of crossing a line there and supporting Sam too much. And I think I'm not asking everybody to feel like I am, that's our listeners. And if you're uncomfortable with that, that's fine. I'm just trying to share what I would do, knowing and using Christ-like principles to navigate this. And using, principles of our church or things that Christ taught. So that's the way I'd process this, Sam.
Good. I think that's a perfect response, honestly.
And I'm just, you know, I think I just probably have, like I feel right now, just, I think empathy and compassion is recognizing the incredible difficult road you're on. And I think as I've heard so many stories, I better understand how difficult this road is. And I don't think I can learn how difficult the road is without talking to LGBTQ people directly. I can't talk to straight people, tell me about, you know, what this is like for people that they aren't actually walking this road. Tell me, what messages would you love to hear from the church about LGBTQ people that aren't changes in doctrine?
Right.
How's that for a sandbox to answer a question in, Sam?
I actually was talking with my mom about this last night. So my sister, one of my sisters lives in San Francisco. And in her ward, there are a lot of LGBTQ plus, maybe not a lot, but there are several LGBTQ plus people who are open. And they just go, like they go to sacrament meeting. They don't take the sacrament, but nobody watches them. Nobody like judges them for that. There are people apparently who leave in the middle of sacrament to go outside and smoke. People come like not dressed in the typical attire, I suppose. And it's just normal. Like it's totally fine. Doesn't matter because they're all there to try and become better people. And then the bishop and his wife, apparently every Sunday night, they invite all the LGBTQ plus people in their like community just to come over and have dinner and to talk, not in like a churchy way, but just like come have dinner with us. So I think those kind of things are very much a step in the right direction. I don't expect people to understand fully because I don't understand fully the opposite. Like, I don't know what it's like to be heterosexual. But I think just trying to at least not judge, at the very least, at the most, to reach out and try and understand, to love and to, I don't know, just treat them like people. Like, they deserve to be at church or to not go to church if they decide that as much as anybody else.
I love that kind of award. That to me is what Christ did in the New Testament. He created a way that everybody felt welcome. My wife and I tried to do that in our YSA ward. We've always used this line, there shouldn't be a belief or behavior hurdle to feel welcome in a Mormon congregation or a Latter-day Saint congregation, unless you're like an activist yelling at the speaker. Or,
right.
You know, but it sounds like this ward in San Francisco, everybody feels welcome. I've always felt the gate is wide at the congregation level. The narrowing of the gate and where there's a real belief and behavior hurdle is the temple. Yeah. And I love the way maybe perhaps, you know, the congregation can be this really safe place where people want to come into Christ and connect.
Absolutely. That's the hope. And I think that's the purpose of church. It's the church doesn't necessarily save you. I think no matter what your belief is, like if you believe in the LDS church or not, it's not the church itself that saves you, but we go there to become better people and to learn more about Jesus Christ. And I think everybody deserves that as much as anybody else.
Some people when they, and I don't want to assume you're leaving, but you know, some people when they leave the church, they sort of lose their belief in God or a connection to God or any sort of personal relationship with God. Do you worry about that happening with you, Sam, if you leave?
It's a good question. I mean, I don't know, honestly, what will happen or what would happen. I've talked to / seen a few different things happen to friends who are LGBTQ plus and who have stepped away from the church. It seems, at least from my small sample size, that most of them, when they leave the church, they kind of leave everything, where they just, I don't know, sometimes they're angry at the way they were treated, or they realize like that it's not for them, or they find out things that they didn't know before. And I feel like if you leave in anger, then you typically just like let everything go and start over. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, sometimes it's nice, I guess, to start over and to figure out what you want to believe. For myself, I mean, I still go to church. I don't know if I believe everything that's going on, to be honest. But I don't know. I recognize that the church is not perfect, but I also recognize that it helps people. It very frequently helps people become better if that's what they're using it for. And so for me, if I were to step away from the church, and even where I am right now, I still hold on to like core beliefs that I know for sure. And I try and, I guess with everything else that I'm not sure about, I try and like rebuild my faith or my testimony or whatever you want to call it. I just try and figure out what I personally believe in and maybe not what the church itself tells me to believe in. And I think that's maybe that's a good practice for everybody. Just figure out what you already know and then like piece together everything else for yourself instead of just blindly following.
Yeah, I'd invite, if you were leaving, and we're not pretending you're, I'm not trying to invite you to leave. Right. I just really want to be careful with our listeners that no one leaves this podcast saying I'm trying to help Sam leave, but I'm trying to sort of walk with him as he's making his way in life. And you sort of chart the agenda and I provide thoughtful advice or principles as to help you make the very best decisions for you. Right. Yeah, in the back of my mind, I'd love you to stay, Sam. But I recognize the difficulty of your road, so I honor your decision. But then I'd probably say, you know, what can you do to stay connected to God? And talk about your relationship with God and Christ. And what private spiritual behaviors do you engage in that you continue to engage in so that God continue to guide you? That would be kind of one of the discussions I'd have. And, you know, an impression that came to me during this podcast twice is what in your patriarchal blessing applies that you look at that sort of is connected with you, you know, going into clinical practice and helping other people this way. Is there anything in your patriarchal blessing that sort of talks about that? Not necessarily, I'm going to be, you know, a PhD in psychology. Right. But
yeah, kind of. I think in there's like a section where it talks about spiritual gifts and things like that. And it mentions compassion and things like that multiple times, and the ability to talk with and empathize with others. And I don't know. I mean, those are all very necessary qualities for a good counselor or therapist to be able to have compassion for people who are struggling in whatever way, to talk with them and empathize with them. So, I don't know. I think it matches well.
One of the things that's been interesting for me is to sometimes read patriarchal blessings of our LGBTQ members. Some don't want to read them because if they've lost faith in the church, that it's triggering for them.
Right.
And church can be triggering. You seem to be able to be in this space where you're trying to engage as thoughtfully as you can. So sometimes I do, even if someone's leaving, I say, take your patriarchal blessing with you. You know, don't stop reading that. Even though, you know, if it says marriage between a man and a woman, that can be something that's not reconcilable at that stage of your life. But there may be other content in there that's actually very, very helpful. So it's just a general piece of advice I give to people.
Good.
Because I believe that God is talking to you through your patriarchal blessing. So I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's good advice.
What's your family doing helpful for you right now, now that you're more open with your mom and maybe other siblings?
Yeah, so my whole family knows everything, which is nice now.
Do they kind of know it seems like you're wanting to go down this path of finding a partner?
Yes, very much so.
And how are they responding to that?
Initially, they responded, well, it was mixed, honestly. I think the older siblings and my mother, it was more difficult for them just because they're just so very like firm in the church. All my family is.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very firm in the church. And I guess just generationally, like beliefs are different. Like LGBT issues, I feel like are much more open-minded for like millennials and under, and mm-hmm. It is getting older as well, which is nice. But I noticed that my younger siblings were all just like immediately, you do whatever makes you happy. Like if you're gay, be gay, essentially. And if you want to step away from the church, like we'll still love you. We're not going to change that. And my older siblings, my mom said that as well, but I could tell that I don't know, especially with my mom, it kind of hurt a bit more, the idea of stepping away from the church. And I get it because the whole eternal families thing, it's a hard thing to reconcile as well. So, yeah, I guess overall, they've responded well. It took some of them a bit longer, but we're all now at the point where we respect each other's beliefs wherever they are, and we just love each other I think that's the most important thing, because if we can't love each other now, how are we going to in whatever heaven is coming after it?
I love that. I think it's principle based on the doctrine of love and the doctrine of family. I think family is a doctrine, and I think your family is practicing the doctrine of we're keeping our family together through what your family is doing. So I think that's great. I love the Macintosh video on the church's website where their son is stepping away and the dad says, well, he's dating a guy. That's not really the plan.
Right.
And the mom in the video, Becky, sort of says, you know, at the end of the day, everybody and anybody's welcome in our home, and we're just going to leave this at the Savior's feet. So I do love that video for Mormon families that have a son or a daughter like you that, to use that dad's words, you know, is dating, and it's not exactly what we thought would be happening in our right. family, but this is how we're navigating it because we're using gospel principles of love and family to keep our family together. So I'm very comfortable with what your family's doing. It's what I would try to do as a parent, and just leave it at the Savior's feet and say, I'm going to see you, Sam, for all the good you're going to accomplish in your life. And I realize that my hopes for you as a parent have changed now, but I'm just going to try to see all the gifts that you have and how you're going to use those gifts to bless other people. And I want you to feel my hands at your back and support you in what you think is the right path for you. And I think as we keep our family members together, they make better decisions. I think if you're going to go in this world, not like a different world, but if you're going to go down this path, you need to be in a really good spot emotionally to make really good decisions.
Yeah.
If you're going to start dating men, there's a lot of ways to do that. and some, you know, and I think you want to create an environment where you're going to make the very best decisions and go slow and be thoughtful. And, you know, that's kind of a conversation a parent didn't probably think they'd ever have with one of their children.
Right.
And maybe they don't, but you still want your children to make the very best decisions on whatever road they feel. Any concluding thoughts for our listeners, Sam? Anything else you'd like to share? Any thoughts?
I don't know. I think what I hope that everybody understands, both LGBTQ plus and not, is that like it's okay if somebody else doesn't have the beliefs that you do. Like, I have a very nuanced faith. I know a lot of people in the church and out of the church. And I guess if it were a spectrum, also everywhere in between. And if everybody just was okay with that, just respected each other's beliefs and their sexualities and whatever else, like if everybody just was loving and respectful and at least didn't actively like talk against them, we would be in a much more better place than we are. Like all of these LGBTQ plus suicides, they would for sure decrease. Depression mm-hmm. and anxiety would go down. I wouldn't need to become a counselor, essentially. Mm-hmm. We could just all love each other and be open and not have to be afraid to come out or to say that we're questioning something in the church or whatever it may be. Like it'll just be a very open, loving world.
I love that. Thank you, Sam, for joining us and sharing a little bit of your journey. You're a great man with a great future.
Thank you.
I am going to be looking forward to seeing how your life unfolds, Sam.
Me too.
And I would guess if we could have your older set, maybe we will.
Yeah, go for it.
And you can come back in 10 years at 33 and tell us more of your story.
Cool.
Because you're going to have a great life. And you're going to help a lot of people. So thank you, Sam Skidmore, for joining us on an episode of Listen, Learn, and Love.